7th on the Monty Show. How the heck are you? Make sure you find us on SoundCloud, on iTunes, on Google Play, on Twitter, and on mine. It's all The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, and themontyshow.com. Is the NBA fixed? I say there's no question it's fixed. I'll explain. Is LeBron passing Kobe Bryant? I think in the hearts and minds of some, not all, of some NBA fans, I do believe that LeBron has passed Kobe Bryant. I am not one of those people, but I think it's definitely happening. So we'll talk about that today. We got to talk about the choking Philadelphia 76ers, Matt Harvey's thoracic surgery, and we saw Avengers, what was it? Infinity War. Infinity War.
In LeBronto.
Yeah, we did not see it in LeBronto. We actually saw it in Arizona where it's hot. But we got to talk about Infinity War. That movie annoyed me. Something fierce. But I want to start the show today by talking about the NBA playoffs and whether or not the NBA is fixed. And I know that sounds like big talk, and I know that that is one of those things where everybody says that, you know, I'm just being a conspiracy theorist. And folks, I'm not being a conspiracy theorist. It's difficult to argue based on what we saw, and this is on my website, themontyshow.com. I've got video evidence, picture evidence. If you watch the Jazz and Rockets this weekend, you have seen it. You know that it is not far-fetched that the NBA and its officials are steering this series to make sure that they get Golden State and Houston in the Western Conference Finals.
Right.
I am on board with that 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it's been going on throughout the playoffs for the Jazz, right? I mean, we saw it just blatantly in the OKC series with the, you know, the Melo foul, or I should say the Gobert foul on Melo, where he doesn't touch him at all, and there's clearly, what, 3 or 4 feet of space there?
Oh, yeah.
Like, just blatantly, it was not a foul, and they called a foul. And then we get into this series, I say we, the Jazz get into this series with the Rockets, and it's the James Harden flopping theatrics show on the floor. And he's been doing it all year, and it's not unique to the Jazz, but what is unique to the Jazz is the fact that we agree on this. The Jazz are not the big name in the NBA, and
nope.
I think everybody knows that. And James Harden is not a Utah Jazz. James Harden is a Houston Rocket.
But at what point does that matter less? And in the parameters of this conversation, I think it matters in as large of a fashion as possible, because the Jazz are a great organization. They have history. They have Stockton and Malone, the Salt Palace, the Delta Center, now the Viv.
But like, that's not cool to the younger generation, and that's a problem.
But the Utah Jazz do not bring eyeballs to the television, the internet, or their iPhones. They don't. Outside of Utah, I think, and I get it. Hey, I get that it's not the draw.
Yeah.
I get that it is not the big name that James Harden is with the step back and the cool shoes. I get that. Now, Donovan Mitchell has a chance to change that, because I think Donovan Mitchell is the transformative talent that Gordon Hayward was not, because he's got a personality. And I think that matters. I think the job they did with the alternate uniforms this year, fantastic.
Excellent.
The T-shirts, the court, the uniforms, the shoes. I think the Jazz marketing department did a great job.
Yeah.
But they cannot overcome the NBA and its officials. And today, I think that game last night, I wrote this today, that I think that's the perfect example of how the NBA has their officials steer games towards a desired outcome. That's not to say that the NBA outright fixes games, but I don't think there's any question. And Tim Donaghy, the now disgraced former NBA official who has no reason to lie, wrote this in his book and has said this on my radio show 100 times, that the NBA says, hey, we want to see the Rockets win this series. We want to see the Oklahoma City Thunder win this series, because we want Russell Westbrook versus James Harden.
Yeah.
There's only one way to overcome that, and that's win the damn game at all costs. And the Jazz did that in OKC, even though in game five, they got completely hosed by the officials. They overcame that in game six at home. Against the Rockets, they're too good of a team. The Houston Rockets are a better basketball team than the Utah Jazz. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But when you see touch fouls being called, when you see James Harden fouling Rudy Gobert across the wrist with a hard slap that was audible on the microphone and they did not call it, when you see Donovan Mitchell go to the basket, get fouled, and the official is standing right there, no call.
Yeah.
Then you see James Harden shove a ball in Dante Exum's face, and the NBA says, well, Dante Exum didn't have physical position, so that's a block. Well, he didn't have physical position because James Harden tried to ram a basketball down his throat. That's why he didn't have physical position. That's a foul on Dante Exum. You just start seeing the phantom Rudy Gobert call on Carmelo Anthony. The call where Royce O'Neal gets called for a foul when Steven Adams smacks Russell Westbrook in the face, and O'Neal just happens to be standing there with his arms down, by the way. And not to play the race card, but I don't know if you know this, Steven Adams is white. And he's not even olive-skinned. Steven Adams is white. That's a white dude.
Yeah.
Royce O'Neal is African American. Yeah. They don't. Their skin tone looks nothing alike. I have no idea how they called that on Royce O'Neal.
Yeah,
I don't get it, but they did, and they did that because they wanted that series to be close. And if Oklahoma City wasn't going to win it, they wanted that to go seven games. And now that they didn't get that, they're going to make damn sure that it's Rockets and Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Pelicans aren't getting the calls. Who's complaining about the officials? The Pelicans are. You see Golden State complaining about the officials? Not very much. They're smart. And this is one of the things that really tweaks me about James Harden.
Yeah.
James Harden gets all the calls, and he still complains about the officials. And I don't understand it.
Yeah. I mean, James Harden is the classic, you know, not diva may not be the right word, but he acts like a diva on the floor. I mean, you know, he gets the easy flop call. Like, He'll do the typical, he's got the ball and he raises up through the defender's arms, and somehow that's a foul on the defender. And that's been a debate for several years, whether that should be a foul or not. Kevin Durant, you know, trademarked that. I mean, that was his move, the swing through move. That was where all of this, you know, this acting and theatrics really started, with KD doing the swing through. And then you got guys like Harden who are lifting up through people's arms now. And it's like, at what point do we just get an even keel game? The best team should win, and it should be even officiating. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, sure, the outcome was always going to be the Rockets were going to win this series. I don't think anybody's doubting that just because of the level of firepower they have. And by the way, they've been winning these games without making threes, so that's really saying something. But
look at game two of the series.
Yeah.
How many free throws did Jazz starters shoot in game two? Zero. Not one or two. Not a single Jazz starter went to the free throw line in game two.
Yeah.
How is that possible in an NBA game that one of your starting five doesn't shoot a free throw?
Yeah.
That's alarming. Oh, well, they didn't get into the paint. Come on. Really? They didn't call fouls.
Yeah.
And now, by the way, the horrendous news that not only is Dante Exum out, but I don't know what you do at guard, because Ricky Rubio is not going to play in game five. So Exum and Rubio are out for game five. I mean, the series is over.
The series is over. I mean, it's not even in question. It's over. And in my estimation, I would guess that Donovan Mitchell fouls out near the end of the game due to frustration, I think. And I don't even blame him, dude. I really don't
he
even
blame
him.
He was quite frustrated.
I don't even blame him for what he said, you know, after the game. You know, if this is how Harden's got to win the MVP, then, you know, F it. Like, I don't blame him for that, dude. Like, call the game fairly, and whoever wins deserves to win. But we're not seeing that.
But here's the dirty truth. That's good business for the NBA.
Well, yeah. I mean, sure it is. Yeah.
Because you will get more people to watch Golden State and Houston just because there's more people in Texas and in California, in the Bay Area, than you will
it's a better matchup.
And that's my point.
Yeah.
The Jazz are not good enough yet to command a television audience.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell is, but the Jazz are not. And I think this is very different. If you look at what's going on in the Boston Philly series, Philly's just not playing well. Brett Brown is being horribly outcoached by Brad Stevens in that series.
Putting on a clinic, dude.
Yeah. Brett Brown is just mentally frozen in that series. But Quinn Snyder, I think, is outcoaching D'Antonio.
Yeah.
Like, I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, tactically, the Jazz have been better. The problem comes in. The problem comes in when, you know, you're getting – it's the touch fouls you were referencing earlier. When Donovan Mitchell gets a soft – just a really soft, shouldn't be foul called on him, and that's his first inside of the first minute of the game.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking to yourself, well, I guess I'm going to be at 5 in the third quarter and have to sit for a while.
Yeah, and I'm not telling you that Mike D'Antoni's a bad coach.
Oh, he's
because
not.
Because Mike D'Antoni's not a bad coach. I just think Quinn Snyder has outcoached him. And I think they have gotten a lot of help from the officials. I don't have any doubt in my mind that this series could very well be 2-2. I think the Rockets are better. I know the Rockets are better. I know the Rockets are going to win this series because they're more talented.
Yeah.
But it should not be 4-1 like it's going to be. It should be a 6-game series. It should be 4, because it should be 2-2 right now. And then it's anybody's series. But it's 3-1, which is a world of difference.
Would you say that about the Warriors series as well?
I don't know what's happened to the Pelicans. They haven't gotten any help from the officials, like, no, surprisingly. But the Warriors have just been elite. Like,
they've
executed
that great defense we always look for.
And I hate to say it, but Draymond Green's been the difference maker. The guy has just been all over the floor. He shot the ball well. He's rebounded the ball well. He's driving the ball up the floor. Like, he's played point center very well. Like, he has really done a nice job handling the offense, triggering the offense, bringing the ball up, rotating the ball. His outlet passing, and I've always known he could throw the ball, but his outlet passing in this series has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's gotten the ball to either Clay or Steph to start a break. I don't know how many times.
And that's really the problem. I mean, you know, we talk about the Jazz being outgunned. You know, the Pelicans are a great offensive team. I mean, they can really score. And yet they are still mightily outgunned here. I mean, the Warriors have dominated them, and the Warriors have done what we were concerned that they wouldn't do, which is flip the switch and get out of the mediocrity and the just garbage regular season they had. And now we're back to that, you know, dynasty team, if you will. I mean, they're starting that, you know, I've seen some stories going around. They're starting the killer lineup tonight, or tomorrow rather, killer lineup.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, that should be their starting lineup, which is, you know, Clay, Steph, KD, Draymond, and Iguodala.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's who you should be starting. So I don't know. I think,
but
that's
who they started yesterday.
Yeah.
They started Thompson, Curry, Durant, Iguodala, and Draymond.
I mean, it's a great starting five.
Yeah. And they got huge performances. And the numbers don't reflect it, but Draymond Green played an incredibly, I thought he had a really good game. I'll just keep saying it. I think Draymond had a huge impact on that series. Iguodala, I could take it or leave it with Iguodala. But you know what? I also look at the contribution that they got from, like, Cook, the contribution that they got from, like, I thought Looney gave them big minutes. Like, they're getting contributions from everywhere, and I don't see that New Orleans is getting that. You're obviously always going to get something from Anthony Davis, who played 40 minutes and took 22 shots in that game. And he was a really good player. Etwan Moore showed up, I thought, but he didn't shoot well from three. I mean, you've got to find a guy that you can consistently count on from deep. If you're not shooting the three in this league, when you shoot, I think they shot 15% from three-point New
you're
Orleans,
losing.
You're not going
you're
to
losing.
Win. You're not. And what I always say about Golden State is the reason they can beat you is because you can score 115 points on them and lose. They're going to score 120, 125 points. You want to run a track meet? Okay, great. Let's do it. You want to run half court? Great. Let's do it, because they're going to screen you to death.
Yeah.
They can play both styles. They're an elite defensive team. And when you can shoot the three the way they shoot the three, I don't know how you beat them. The New Orleans shot 15%. Golden State didn't shoot very well either, but they shot 33% and made 11 threes.
Yeah.
You can't make 4 3-pointers against Golden State and win. Like, that's not going
to
happen.
Well, and that's why everybody wants to see Warriors Rockets, right? Because that is the ultimate series. And I would still make the case that if the Warriors are playing their best ball, they are just slightly better than the Rockets.
Oh, I think they're better. They're better than the Rockets. We've seen that in this Jazz series. The Rockets have struggled with tenacity from guys like Joe Ingles, Donovan Mitchell. No team gets into the paint better and plays inside-out basketball than the Golden State Warriors, but you don't think about that because you don't view them as a driving kick team. But that's exactly what they are when things are going well. And I don't like the Rockets now. I mean, this James
They've
Harden thing...
They've become that team for you.
He's really pissed me off in this series. Like, James Harden is wonderfully talented. He is a very skilled basketball player. But this flopping nonsense makes him very unlikable. It is hard to like James Harden.
Who do you dislike more, Russ or Harden?
Oh, Russ by far. Russ is just not a... I have no love for Russell Westbrook. I mean, he's just an a-hole. I mean, I'm not trying to throw down on Russell Westbrook on this show today, but...
We're just keeping it real.
It is what it be, and it is that he's an a-hole. I mean, Russell Westbrook's not a likable person at all. Like, James Harden, after the game, signs autographs for a kid, gives him his shoes, like, is high-fiving Rocket fans. And this is something that as a European football fan, this is something I value highly. When you are, Liverpool this weekend, of course, went to Stamford Bridge and got owned, right? Like, we pwned them, 1-0. Somehow we're still hanging around for the fourth spot in this league, but whatever. But Chelsea fans are great, but Liverpool fans, God, see, son of a mother.
You know, we were having a good show until right now.
You know, I'm trying, man, I'm trying to hold it together. My emotions are very fragile.
Woosa.
Son of a mule. Yu Darvish is on the disabled list. Retroactive to May 4th with the flu. Get a life.
You said get a life. The guy is a pitcher. What do you want him to do?
What? He can't get some Theraflu?
Dude, this dude isn't Otani, okay?
How about
he
airborne?
On every fifth
hey,
day.
Hey, you. You. Not you, you. Come on over. I've got tubes of airborne.
Oh, I thought you know.
You stop it. I've got tubes of airborne. Like, I can give you air. I know you're strapped for cash. I can give you airborne.
Yeah.
Even though you're stealing that money from the Ricketts family and the Chicago Cubs,
stealing
I can afford
that money. They offered it up on a silver platter and said, please.
He wore a gun and a mask to the negotiation table.
Otherwise known as a pen.
Thank you. You Darvish on the disabled list for the Cubs. Like, I give up. I give up on it. We'll talk Cubs baseball. Don't worry. Anyway, what were we talking about?
We're moving on to LeBronto.
LeBronto. Let's do LeBronto. I don't know how you explain LeBron James in Toronto. I don't know how you explain his pure domination of the Toronto Raptors. No matter who they throw at him, no matter how they throw people at him, doubles, they tripled him, and he hit a fadeaway. The game-winning shot the other night, I don't know how you explain that.
It's greatness. It's absolute greatness. I mean, I don't know... If you're Toronto, how you allow him to just walk it up the floor, no problem, just a nice, easy jog up the floor. Oh, gets about 2 feet behind three-point line, sprints to the block. Oh, little fadeaway, bank shot, game over. I mean, it's too easy. But
here's the thing. It's not a little bank shot.
That is a great, really difficult shot to make.
From
a defensive perspective, though, that is a high percentage shot to be giving up to LeBron James. To another player, okay, that's a really difficult shot.
I was surprised they didn't stop the ball.
How do you not stop the ball? Make him shoot
I was really surprised by that.
Make him shoot a 35-footer, man.
And this is what I say about Golden State. And I see this on a regular basis. We're watching Boston and Philly in the background. Philly's blowing out Boston, by the way, in that game. So there will be no sweep. It doesn't look like they're up 20. In the fourth quarter in Philly. But I ask myself on a regular basis, how do you allow Jason Tatum to beat you? How do you allow Steph Curry? Like, if I'm playing the Golden State Warriors...
It's the OKC game against the Warriors when Steph pulls up from 30 feet and knocks it down.
Yeah. But here's my question to DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and all the Raptors. How do you allow LeBron James to beat you? I'm fine. If Kyle Korver wants to knock down threes at the buzzer, okay, but it wasn't LeBron. If Kevin Love wants to knock down a one-on-one three-pointer, hey, it wasn't LeBron.
Yeah.
I'm not letting LeBron James beat me. I'm not letting him beat me in the first quarter. I'm not letting him beat me into the half.
Yeah.
And I'm sure as hell not letting him beat me at the buzzer. I don't care, J.R. Smith. You pick one of those guys. Anybody but LeBron. Anybody but Steph. Anybody but, you know, like, who's my, the Lakers. Right now, it's anybody but Julius Randle. Pick your poison. Anybody but Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
Anybody but James Harden. Like, I don't care. Call a foul on me. I'm knocking him down hard every single time he comes to the paint.
And that's what I think is sort of lacking in the NBA playoffs. I mean, we saw it a little bit tonight in the Celtics game. You know, a little chippiness between Embiid and Rozier. Like, no big deal, right? I mean, it's no big deal. But we don't see star players getting knocked down. You do not see teams sending a message to guys like Harden and LeBron even.
Well, not to keep talking about the website, themontyshow.com. It's what I wrote on the website today. I grew up watching Michael Jordan get decimated by the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah.
The Jordan rules.
Yes.
Against the Knicks. Against the Pacers. I grew up watching Jeff Van Gundy hang on to a dude's leg on the floor at the Garden. Right? Like, that's the basketball I grew up watching. I don't think that will ever happen again. Like, you don't have to throw punches. But if you come in the paint in the playoffs, bro, you might break your hip. You know, like, sorry. You're going down and you're going to, even at LA Fitness, this is my philosophy at LA Fitness.
Hey man, I let him go by, you got him.
Look, I'm a fat ass. Okay, so there's a couple things I know. You're quicker than me. But that doesn't mean that my long arms can't get to you. I routinely knock guys down. I routinely grab guys. Yeah, I routinely grab guys.
And don't even get us started on the pick game that we have together. Oh, it's man. Vicious.
Dude, late picks in basketball?
Vicious.
Good night now.
You don't want that, bro.
Good night now.
You don't want that.
But my point is, where is that basketball? How are you, like, TJ McConnell just got a wide open layup. How is that possible?
Because it's
Greg Monroe has to foul TJ McConnell. You're down 20, MF-er. Foul the guy. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, foul him.
I think a lot of people are talking about how the Raptors are mentally soft. And this is not just DeMar being soft. Because in my opinion, he is mentally soft. I mean, there's no other way to explain it. How he has just disappeared.
Stunning.
Dude, the guy dominates in the regular season. He is one of the best players in the league. I'm not saying he's up there with LeBron and KD, but he is in the upper echelon
Absolutely.
Of talents.
Absolutely.
You know, and in the playoffs, he has been a nobody. A absolute
what,
nobody.
What, but what
Dude,
do
the
you
guy's
attribute
on the
that
bench
to?
At the end of the game, I attribute it to the fact that he's mentally soft. He cannot handle the pressure at the end of the game. We talked about this last week at length. DeMar DeRozan had a chance to win a game. I believe it was at home. I think it might have been game two. I can't remember. Where he drives down the right side of the lane to the block and fades away from a double team. How are you doing that? You need to be one-on-one on the wing, get to the block the way KD and all the greats do.
His problem now is he can't make a three. Like, game two, I think he was 0 for 5.
Yeah.
Shot well from inside the arc, but he was 0 for 5 from 3. Like, it's great you scored 24 points. But, and this is the other thing I think a lot of basketball fans don't understand. It doesn't matter what you do if it's a 48-minute game, whatever you do for the first 43 minutes almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When it's a close game in the last 5 minutes, it's LeBronto.
Yes.
Okay, Van Vliet can't be taking threes to try and win you the game.
After he fell on his right shoulder and it's hanging off his body.
It can't happen.
But this is what I'm saying. You know, specifically in this series, and I think this changes when they go on to play the Celtics or the Sixers, and I think it'll be the Celtics. When they go on to play the Celtics, this you know, mentally soft garbage that Toronto's putting out is not going to happen with Boston. Boston's a physical team. They are a chippy team. And
so you're assuming Boston's getting by Philly?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think they'll go back home and win. I don't even have any doubts about it. I think tonight, you know, Boston, it is what it is. Philly didn't want to get swept. You know, they played a chippy game.
88-73 with 8 minutes
to go. This is what I said about the Warriors when they got blown out by New Orleans, and everybody was freaking out.
It's the Pels, please.
I don't care that they blew them out. That series is over, dude. It's over. You know, and so this,
but what does that mean it's over? What do you mean?
The Warriors are winning that series. The Celtics are winning that series. You know what the odds are of coming back from a 3-0, a 3-1? I mean, they're not slim. With you, dude.
They're slim.
You know, you got to win games in a row in the playoffs. I mean, try getting a bucket five possessions in a row. It's not going to happen, right? So, look, all I'm saying is that when LeBron faces the Celtics, let's say, he's not going to be able to just kind of walk the ball up the floor. Marcus Smart's not having that. You know, the Jaylen Browns of the world aren't having that.
Correct.
Al Horford's not having it. So, I don't know. I'll be interested to see, as the playoffs progress, you know, whoever he plays in the next round, what they do to stop him.
Do you buy into playoff fouls, though? Because what does this that is mean? Something... Well, think about the Caps and Pens series that we've been paying attention to. Because, I mean, we love playoff hockey. But you have a guy that's suspended for three games.
Which, by the way, was a little aggressive. He should have got a game, not three in the playoffs.
But he made a huge hit where a shoulder wound up on a face that broke a jaw and ended a season.
Talking.
Okay, that's a huge hit in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That sets a tone for a series, and now Pittsburgh's on the brink of elimination. And I feel like that hit really charged Washington.
Yeah.
So if you are Marcus Smart, here's the question. LeBron James is going to the rack. Let's say he's running down the floor with 5 seconds to go. You can't foul him. I think you got to double and triple him. It's not even – I think that the problem that we're seeing in the NBA right now is there is just no such thing as situational awareness. I don't know how with 5 seconds you are not automatically doubling LeBron James. And that's why I say – I think I love Dwayne Casey as a coach. He's getting outcoached by Tyronn Lue, who might be the best playoff coach in the history of playoff coaches, because he sucks in the regular season.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they were on the brink of detonation. Like, they traded the whole freaking roster in Cleveland.
Dude, in this new roster, boy, it has worked.
But then, and not even, right? Like, Larry Nance isn't even playing right now. Jordan Clarkson's not even contributing right now. Oh, but then all of a sudden, Tyronn Lue, the playoffs get here, and he's doing all kinds of things. Periscope says if the Cavs can play like they've been playing, I don't think they're going to the finals. If they get to the finals, I don't see them beating either Houston or Golden State.
He's not winning a championship this year, but I'm not ready to say at this point, after what he's done to Toronto, I'm not ready to say he's not going to the finals. I think if you're the Celtics, there is one mission in life. Don't let LeBron James beat you.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that is to get physical with him. We have seen.
I agree.
When he played the Spurs, he had a lot of trouble with Kawhi Leonard and the physicality that Kawhi brings on defense. And so I think, you know, when you're talking about an all-time great player in LeBron James, you're not going to outskill him. You're not going to, you know, outstrength him. You're not going to beat him at the core things in the game. So what you have to do is you have to get in his head. You got to pull a Joe Ingles and get in his head the way Joe Ingles got in Paul George's head.
Yeah, and RCZ801 makes a great point on Periscope as well. Rodney Hood is struggling massively.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's basically not been a factor in the LeBronto series. I love that.
In the land.
I think I heard that. That might have been Coward who said that. Colin called him LeBronto, I think, today. Is where I stole that from, but it really has been the land that's dominated that series, right?
Like, yeah.
And so they will need guys like Rodney Hood. They will need Larry Nance. They will need depth. They'll need Jordan Clarkson to figure it out.
They haven't played anybody who is an elite three-point shooting team.
No.
Because the East doesn't have them. You know, like, who in the East is capable of shooting the three ball the way teams in the West
Boston.
Are? Well,
Boston.
Well, I haven't seen...
It's not Philly.
No, it's not Philly, no.
Certainly not, but Boston can really shoot it. Tatum can shoot it. Certainly Marcus Smart can shoot it. Jaylen can shoot it. Like, they have almost everybody that they put out there can shoot the three.
I guess that's just not how they have been playing in this series, but you're right. I mean, they do have shooters. But my point is, even if the Celtics shoot the lights out, they're not shooting as well as a Houston or a Dubs are.
Hey, has LeBron James passed Kobe Bryant?
No.
There's so much talk about
that. What does that mean? I think before you have the conversation, whether you're on Twitter, on this show, or talking to your boy in the park, what does it mean for LeBron James to quote-unquote pass Kobe Bryant?
That's an interesting conversation. What I think it means to fans is that he's had a better career than Kobe. And I really struggle with that.
I define a career by winning. That's like literally that's it. There are people, and I was having a pretty long Twitter discussion the other day about how LeBron's got great stats and his teams beat Kobe's teams when they played head-to-head. I don't care who won the game.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, look at the All-Star games. Kobe owned him several times. Right?
I don't even care about All-Star games. I care about how they did in the finals. How did you do when your legacy was on the line? Because that's how I define dudes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, whether you're a pitcher, a basketball player, a quarterback, whatever.
Yeah.
How did you do? Eli Manning is interesting. Eli Manning did really well with the game on the line.
Yeah.
Super Bowls and helmet catches, and he did really well. Okay, if I look at Dan Marino. Dan Marino was great in the regular season. Never won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem for me. You know, it's Stockton and Malone. Stockton and Malone were great performers. But you can't get away from the fact that Michael Jordan stripped Karl Malone under the basket and the Bulls won that series. Like, like Craig Elo can never get over the fact that Jordan dropped that bomb on him in the Richfield Coliseum in Cleveland to begin the Jordan land. Era. Yeah, in the land. Right. I mean, like, you're never getting away from that.
Yeah.
If you are Kobe Bryant, you're a guy who won more than you lost in the NBA Finals.
Matters.
If you are LeBron James, you've lost a hell of a lot more than you've won in the NBA Finals. And it'll happen again this year.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why championships matter. And we can sit here and talk about how, well, legacies aren't made by rings.
He's got the most points ever and the most, you know, minutes played. And, yeah.
When you talk about a guy, you're like, well, how many championships did he win? You know, like, come on.
How about five?
Yeah. Like, sorry, man. Kobe Bryant, in my opinion, had a superior career to LeBron James to this point. Superior. I look at Michael Jordan. I think Michael Jordan's the best player of all time. And he played in the middle era. He bridged the 80s and 90s gap. And he introduced Kobe Bryant to the NBA.
Yeah.
He was... You know, I think he's been instrumental in shaping LeBron's early career. But LeBron's done all this on his own. Is LeBron the better player of his generation? No, because I think Kobe has been around for a lot of his generation. And by the way, this is the only conversation where, you know, going to Miami matters. Because he couldn't win in Cleveland, so he went to Miami to make sure he won.
Right.
And I think that's a big part of the narrative.
So it matters that Kobe was a Laker forever.
A Laker for life. And he won with Shaq and without Shaq.
Which was a big deal in its time. I mean, that was a huge story.
Yeah, and by the way, Shaq won with the Lakers and after the Lakers. Right? Like, so those two guys independently of themselves. I think Shaquille O'Neal's arguably the best big man who's ever played the game. Certainly the most dominant big man that's ever played the game, just on volume alone, size, strength. Yeah. Now, we can talk about Wilt, and although I hate comparing guys across generations, but man, I'm telling you that Kobe Bryant has had a better career than LeBron James has, simply on the fact that, A, Kobe was a Laker for life, and there's a certain mystique about Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
LeBron hasn't earned that yet. Now, when he retires, it will almost be instantaneously, but here's my problem with LeBron right now. Why are you jumping on scorers' tables?
I don't get it, dude.
Why are you like, he hits that shot the other night in the middle of a series to win a game, and he jumped on the scorer's table. And I'm like,
you trying to be Kobe?
Like,
or?
No, it's not even that. It's Jordan did it, Kobe did it, but they did it when they won championships.
Yeah.
You did it when you won a playoff game. Like, celebrate on the floor, jump up and down. I get it. But jumping on the scorer's table, not once, now twice? Come on. You haven't won anything yet.
Yeah.
And for my money, I think LeBron's a bit of a grandstander, because what's now going to happen to that picture of LeBron with his arms outstretched on the scorer's table?
It's the same picture.
It's going to be, oh, wow, well, LeBron won championships. And dude, that's not winning. That shot didn't win a championship. But because he jumped on that scorer's table, people will remember that as a championship shot.
Yeah.
And it's simply not. It's the Trumpification of LeBron James.
Which I think is a great comparison in this situation.
You tell the story that you want people to know. You don't have to tell the truth. Hey, I jumped up on that scorer's table. Look at that picture, man. That was a great run to a championship that you didn't win. Right? Like, I mean, the story in Miami has to be that you went out on a loss. Right? Like, that has to be the story.
Yeah.
you lost the NBA finals in Cleveland before you won them. You left, came back, and then won the finals. You won the championship. Like, I think that that story, and my guess is, and I'm not even hating on LeBron, but my guess is that story won't be told. Oh, LeBron's got rings, and okay. He's lost more than he's won.
Yeah.
Has he won seven championships? Has he been in the NBA finals seven straight times?
Yeah.
He's lost more than he's won. And I think that's a very telling.
Half the time.
Yeah, that's very telling.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't disagree. And listen, I enjoy watching LeBron play. It's must-see TV.
Absolutely it is.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, in that moment, we were fired up, like yelling when he hit that shot. Like, it was a great moment.
I'm rooting for the guy.
But, like, I think when you compare him to, you know, Kobe and Jordan, and granted, if you're on Periscope, you see what's on the wall, bro, which is a Jordan Gatorade poster. Like, it just, there is a greatness about Jordan and Kobe that LeBron doesn't have. He is great in a different way.
And here's the thing. It's not romanticized about how great Jordan was. It's recognized how great Jordan was. There's a big difference. Bob Cousy is romanticized, right? You look at Wilt Chamberlain, he's romanticized and legendary because he banged all these chicks and scored 100 points in a night. And okay, that's called romanticizing somebody. Magic, Jordan, Bird, Dominique, like all the 80s, 90s guys are, it's fresh. I don't have to think too hard. I can think of great moments. I was in the building for championships in Los Angeles. Like the Kobe Shaq Western Conference Finals, the alley-oop, like Scottie Pippen knocking over tables and throwing bins of towels all over the hallway. I was standing there for that.
Yeah.
You know, like they, remember that.
Dude, those moments for you, because you were in person, are why it's so easy for you to understand that Kobe and Jordan are better than LeBron. But, you know, for a lot of people my age, we weren't even in existence at that point. Like, we weren't around for a lot of that stuff. We were kids, man. I mean, we were 5 years old, you know? And so I think nowadays, when you got, you know, 30-year-olds talking about who's the best, well, they're going to say LeBron because they've watched him dominate. But I'm saying Kobe because I grew up with him. I bought the guy's shoes. Like, he was my guy.
Mm. And that's a great point on Periscope. That the best part about the 80s and 90s is they genuinely hated each other.
Yeah.
There was no hugging and kissing.
And the refs allowed them to fight, essentially, without fighting.
Yeah. Knicks and
Pacers.
That
doesn't happen, dude.
Reggie Miller, the choke sign at the guard. I mean, that's fantastic basketball.
Those are great moments. And those, we will not see moments like that in
Jordan,
moving forward.
Jordan dunking on Patrick Ewing. Scottie Pippen putting D's nuts on Patrick Ewing's chin. Like, I mean, all of, like, those moments, that's why I love basketball so passionately. That's what pisses me off about James Harden. I cannot imagine Michael Jordan flopping like that.
No.
He probably did. I can't imagine it. I can't imagine Jordan doing it. He was too competitive.
Well, too competitive, and players in that generation would have called you out for that.
Yeah,
and held you accountable for that.
No, they would. You would have gotten beat down for that. If you'd have flopped on the Knicks, Charles Oakley would have been looking for you. That's the God's honest truth. Like, and I can remember Bill Laimbeer. There's a play where Jordan did this spin around over the head flip on the Pistons. And it's I remember where I was when he hit that shot on Elo.
Yeah, but listen, nowadays, you know, we were just talking about how, you know, you need to knock down LeBron James to send a message. You're getting ejected most of the time for that now, right? Like, any kind of over the top, like flagrant one style foul, you're pushing, you're getting close to ejection with those kind of fouls in today's game, and that's the problem.
Well, and I think the game's changed a little bit, not to drone on about this, but I think the game's changed a little bit because the guys play so much higher. They're so much more athletic.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
above the rim. I mean, it's a lot more dangerous. Michael Jordan was the high flyer. Like, Dominique Wilkins was the high flyer, but the difference was, it was against Bill Laimbeer and Dave Corzine and Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley. It wasn't against guys like, you know, Clint Capella, Rudy Gobert, guys that can get off the floor and injure you. It wasn't against those guys. It wasn't against Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah.
You know, now if you are, if you're LeBron James and you go to the house on Valachunas, you better get there, because if you don't, you're probably going to land really difficult, and you're probably going to get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, you look at – it's just a different game. That's – anyway, I could go on and on about it.
Yeah.
I my passion for the NBA was etched in the 80s and 90s. You know, I can remember sitting in my Aunt Teresa's condo in Chicago watching Lakers and Celtics on CBS with Brent Musburger and Dick Stockton. And, like, I remember that vividly. I remember Byron Scott dunking. I remember the 86 Mets. I remember the 84 Cubs and frickin' Steve Garvey. I remember that. It's just, things have changed now. And the flopping thing really, really, I hate it. I can't. That's why I don't like James Harden. He's really the guy that flops. Everybody whines and complains. James Harden is truly in a flopping league of his own. Like, there are other guys who flop, but not like him. It's the one thing that really bothers me about the Premier League. You know, English football, the faking and the flopping and the diving is horrendous in the game. It really drives me crazy. Anyway, find us online, themontyshow.com. We're 41 minutes into the show, and we have not talked baseball yet.
Let's do it.
How worried about the Cubs should I be? Today, the news that Yu Darvish has para-influenza. What in the hell? He's got the flu. He's on the 10-day disabled list. He may only miss one start. I'm not worried about the pitching anymore. I'm more worried about the hitting in Chicago. And I say that because the Cubs are just not hitting.
Yeah.
And we had a passionate disagreement last night. You are convinced that the Cubs are fine. And I keep telling you, well, dude, it's May 7th. It's not early anymore.
Right. I'm not. Here's where we disagree, though. You're pissed off because they're not hitting it. And you're saying, well, another great inning. And what I'm saying is, look, dude, it's May. And there's a lot of baseball that we played. And eventually, they're going to figure it out. Guys like Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant are not going to hit whatever the hell pathetic average they're hitting.
Those are not the guys you need to hit to win.
Right, but what I'm saying is that's where it starts. Those guys got to get going for the rest of the team to get going.
Or you could have Wilson Contreras, actually get a hit. You could have, you know, Addison Russell hit a home run. He still doesn't have a home run. He is the only guy with that many at-bats in Major League Baseball that doesn't have a home run yet.
Mm-hmm.
You could have, you know, like Jason Hayward's actually hitting, but last night drops a cookie fly ball to tie the game and eventually sent it to extras when you lost.
Right.
Those guys have to hit because Schwarbs is actually hitting. Baez is actually hitting. The problem is nobody else is. So when you have issues like Yu Darvish, who's not pitching well,
he's been, again, I'm not saying he's a bust as a player, but for the Cubs, so far he's been a bust. Like, he hasn't lived up to it yet.
And I think there is, when you sign with a team like the Cubs, and I think something about the Japanese pitcher, it's not the Japanese player, and this is a really important distinction, the Matsuzakas, the Ichiros, they're not mentally soft. Japanese pitching has historically been very difficult to manage because there is a different mental component to it. Yu Darvish came from the Texas Rangers and the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he came off a catastrophic failure with the LA Dodgers. You signed him to a massive contract with the Cubs, a fresh start. But the problem is the expectations didn't go down. They doubled from Los Angeles to Chicago. And he's not dealt with that yet. And I don't think Yu Darvish is done in Chicago. I think 5 years from now, he will likely have won 100 games. There's a real good chance. But I think there's also a chance that in 5 years, he may have only won 30 games. I think there's a real good chance of that. Because he's not the same guy. And I don't know if he's just dealing with pressure. I don't know that maybe he's just struggling to understand expectations. He's not the same guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's struggling to understand expectations. I don't think he goes out to pitch and is like, well, I need to go seven and make sure that I execute.
No, what he does is he goes out and tries to throw a perfect game every time, which is even worse.
Well, I said, eventually, there's going to be two things that happen here, one way or the other. Yu Darvish is either going to start pitching well and start giving you at least decent outings, no more 4 1/3 garbage, more like 6 2/3, 7 innings, and they're going to be okay in the pitching department. Or he's going to suck, and they're going to have to figure it out. And then when you look at the offense is either going to figure it out and start clicking and start producing runs because, like, the Cubs, I feel like the Cubs last year relied on a lot of home runs, right?
Yes.
And this year, they're not getting those home runs, as you were just saying. They got to produce runs, play small ball, get guys, just get some base hits, like, just kind of get it going. To me, you talk about Darvish pressing. I could say the whole lineup is pressing. I mean, all those guys are pressing.
It's bad at bats, and this is
their approach is terrible.
Yeah, from Chris Bryant to Anthony Rizzo, all the way up and down the lineup.
We saw it in Contreras last time. I mean, we saw several at bats where it's okay. It's take the changeup down the middle first pitch. Take the the fastball borderline.
Swing at the split in the dirt, and then take the fastball down the cock. And you can't do that in Major League Baseball. And it's so, I don't know how to say this. Just shut up and swing the bat.
Yeah.
Shut your mind up and look for a fastball, and good things will happen. But I say that as a talk show host sitting in my house doing a podcast, not standing at the plate in the Major League ballpark, right? So what you have is you have a mental game of chess. And you go up there swinging at changeups in the dirt and taking fastballs down the pipe, and all of a sudden now you're hitting 140. Whereas you've been a 280 hitter, but now you're hitting 210. I don't know what to say about that. I don't know how you fix it. I'm not a hitting coach, but here's what I know about the Cubs. You fired your hitting coach and you hired Chili Davis. So now there's a new voice with a new perspective, and he is not succeeding. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe Chili will. He's a really good hitting coach. But he hasn't been a good hitting coach as a Cub. And the other question really that I'm starting to ask is, who's Joe Maddon as a manager?
Well, and that's starting to creep in. And you start to wonder, I don't think he's losing his edge. I don't think his performance is going down.
Is he a witch doctor that everybody makes him out to be?
Oh, well, you're going to find out.
Or is he a guy who botched a managerial run in the World Series and won anyway, and now we're starting to see him mess around with the lineup, and all of a sudden, the voodoo's not working. Like, Bruce Bochy in San Francisco.
And when you say he botched it, you're talking about leaving Chapman in? Or?
Oh, he horribly mismanaged the bullpen in the World Series. No question about that. The best move he made was John Lester, but John Lester went to him and said, hey, I'm going to warm up. And what are you going to say to John Lester at that point? No. So Johnny ran down there and warmed up and gave him, I think, what, 4 innings of stellar relief?
Yeah.
So when I look at Boch in San Francisco, elite manager.
Mm-hmm.
Elite. He's kept his club within striking distance in the NL West, the most difficult division in baseball, without now Bumgarner, who's on the way back, hasn't gone out for a rehab yet. Johnny Cueto, they got a huge break with Cueto today. It is not a full tear off the bone of the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow. James Andrews says it's a strain. And by the way, please stop. And this drove me nuts on Twitter today. Oh, no tear in the elbow. Okay, a strain is a sprain. Strain is a tear. It's just not torn off the bone.
Yeah.
So there's could be a hole in the middle of the ligament, whatever.
It's not 100%.
Any way you slice it, it's 6 weeks instead of 18 months. So you caught a huge break there. Bruce Bochy has done a great job of managing young talent in his rotation. Chris Stratton has been a revelation for that club.
Well, and as usual, the Giants have been able to figure it out when they're in the worst of times. And somehow, I never thought I'd be saying this about them, but somehow their reputation precedes them with that. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, the Giants are going to get out of the woods here. I mean, you get Bumgarner back, maybe you go and sign Harvey, and, all of a sudden, if Harvey works out, you're looking okay. And I find myself wondering, How in the hell did they do this? Because Cueto goes down after Bumgarner goes down, and now you're relying on, you know, Stratton and Ty Block and a bunch of other dudes.
And Smarja now is back.
And now I'm sitting here thinking, well, now all of a sudden they're starting to hit a little bit. Like, you know, starting to heat up. And I see them do that, and I wonder, well, why aren't the Cubs capable of doing that?
They are, but you have to pull the right strings. And I think this team, like Ben Zobrist starting in right field today.
I'm not a huge fan of that.
Okay.
Not a huge fan of that.
Oh, hey,
Who's starting? Who's starting for the opposition? I mean, that can be the only reason.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Jason Hayward, even though he had an error last night.
That's going to happen.
Jason Hayward is a gold glove winning. I think he's got 5 gold gloves.
Right, but when nobody's hitting, what do you do?
Well, he actually is hitting the ball hard. You know, like he has some things figured out. And I don't know, man. We could go on and on about this. They're facing Yarlin Garcia from the Marlins, and he's a left-hander. Lefty. Yeah.
So that's what it is.
That's why they're not playing him. But here's their lineup today. Almora, Zobrist, Bryant, Baez, Contreras, Caratini playing first base, Russell, Happ, and Hendricks, excuse me.
Sorry, so you're sitting Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
How? Help me.
Yeah, how Chris, is that a Chris Bryant's got a 2-run jack in the first. 2-0. Cubs are
so
up.
He's starting to hit a little bit.
Yeah, he's up to 279. You know, the problem is Ben Zobrist, he has to play because he's hitting. The guy's legitimately your only 300 hitter. So you got to play the guy. You know, I could go on. I mean,
it's not panic button time, but it is frustrating to watch. And I don't blame you for being frustrated, but I'm not going to sit here and agree that, you know, they're not making the playoffs and they're a bad team.
Oh, I think they are in big, 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 big trouble. The Cubs are in.
Dude, all they got to do is
all the projections. Well, that's going to be really difficult to do.
Right, but the Brewers aren't what you thought they were going to be.
The Cardinals are better than everybody thought they would be.
Yeah.
And the win projection numbers favor the Cardinals, not the Cubs. And the Cardinals will spend money when they're close. Will the Cubs? Or will the Cubs want to stay under the luxury tax?
I think the Cubs will spend money.
I think they want to stay under the luxury tax to afford Bryce Harper. That's what I think.
So then don't expect them to win. This is the Dodger conversation.
Well, no, the Dodger conversation is quite different because they lost Kershaw now. You know, they lost Ryu. They lost Kershaw. They've had Alex Wood injuries. They've had Rich Hill injuries. Like, they're decimated by injuries. The Cubs have largely been 100%. They just are not playing good baseball. You know, so, like, everybody wants... The Cubs are always talked about with Machado. Mm. That doesn't... I don't think that fixes it. I think if he comes in and you get him June 15th. So what is that? July, August, September. He gives you 95 games. Whatever it might be. And he hits you 25, 30 bombs. Okay, great. That worked. Worth it. But you're not going to keep him long term.
Right.
Because you're going to sign Bryce Harper and you're not going to afford Rizzo, Bryant, Harper, and Machado.
Everybody's just writing it off that he's going to the Cubs. I mean, is that what we're doing?
No. Who, Bryce Harper?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be very difficult to keep him out of Chicago because of his relationship. Him and Chris Bryant are best friends. They spend the offseason together. They've talked openly about wanting to play together. They're Vegas kids. And there's some talk that Strasburg's not far behind. You know, like, there's a lot of talk about
that. That's what I say. I mean, listen, I struggle with the idea that you're saying that they're going to sign these guys or go after these guys hard. Obviously, they will. But, you know, they're going to go after Harper and maybe even Strasburg. And yet we're sitting here frustrated by the fact that they're having a down year so far. Like, it hasn't been a good year for them
yet. But how many chances at the World Series do you really get?
Well, you're going to get plenty for the next 5 years.
Well, but you would think... This was supposed to be one of those years. Last year was an apparition. Was it? Or is this lineup flawed? Because right now I can tell you Addison Russell's not going to be your long-term fit at short. He's not. Wonderful defender. You can't hit 220, 240, and not hit home runs. You know, like, you can't do that. And the other issue is that the farm system's not stacked anymore. Like, Gleyber Torres... Hit a walk-off bomb the other day for the Yankees. Looks great. You know, like, you've gotten rid of a lot of your prospects. Now, granted, those prospects were never going to play for you in the majors because you were 3-4 guys deep.
Right.
But at some point...
I don't know. I think I just think it's really easy to start looking at the prospects you could have had, to start hoping for the players that you might get. Like, I feel like it's really easy to get hypothetical and to speculate until they start playing better baseball. And I think it's frustrating. I think it's, you know, you're almost suffering as a Cubs fan because you're like, we got all the guys we need. We're just not playing good baseball. And then you're like, well, we're playing sure. a horrible team. Why aren't we winning? Because they're not playing good baseball. It doesn't matter who you're playing, right? Like, if you don't play good baseball, you're not going to win. So I get it. But at the same time, I'm not hitting the panic button yet. I'm just not. Like, if I'm the Dodgers, there is no panic button. You're right. They're decimated by injury. I mean, the Seager injury was just a start. I mean, you know, now...
There's not much to really talk
about. I mean, there's not much you're going to do about that. And I think there's a general understanding of that. So, I think that the Cubs will... They're either going to figure it out or they're going to suck and they're not going to make the postseason and everyone's going to lose their mind.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of two ways.
Man, I'm just here to tell you that there's a real good chance that the Cubs don't make the playoffs this year. And people need to be freaking fine with that.
So what happens if they do make the playoffs?
They met expectations? I don't know what to tell you. Right now, I'd have a real problem thinking that they're going to make the play. Like, and what would have to happen for them to make the playoffs? I mean, they have a bottom five farm system. Like, how are you going to...
But I don't think it's as huge of an ask to make the playoffs as you're making it out to be.
Oh, man,
all they
dude.
Need to do is start hitting again. Like, literally, that's what you need to do. If you hit and you play good defense and you even have mediocre pitching, you're going to win games.
Yeah.
Especially if you're them. Like, that, so that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, they may be playing bad baseball right now. I'm not even disagreeing with that. Their approach at the plate is terrible.
Yeah.
Right? They got to fix that first and then worry about the numbers. So if you can fix the approach and get back on the fastball the way A.J. Pollock was the other night for the game winner, you know, like, you'll be fine. You just have to take that step.
Yeah. By the way, the Giants are getting raked, and it's Samardzija in Philly. That's a little troubling. We'll see. You know what? We'll see. I'm not here to say that everybody should panic and the world is coming to an end.
You're saying they're average, and I don't disagree with that.
It's time to start really wondering who the Cubs are. Who will the Dodgers be? Who will the Giants be?
But see, like, the Dodgers and the Cubs are not in the same conversation due to injuries. Like, the Dodgers are just going to be an average team this year.
The biggest problem is the Dodgers don't have the wherewithal to hang around. You know what I mean? Like, and Ranger fan on Periscope is saying, should they blow it up? What do you have to blow up? You know, like, that's the difference here. Like, the Dodgers have something to blow up. The Giants have something to blow up. The Cubs are not going to blow up their core. They're too young and they're under club control.
Yeah.
But what you have is, and this is what the problem with the Rangers are. The Rangers have some decent prospects. But what are you doing? Are you trying to contend?
If you want to blow it up, go ahead and trade Cole Hamels. Get some pitching prospects.
You trade Gallo.
And you trade, yeah, well, and that's what I was getting at. You trade guys like Hamels, Gallo, like all your top-end talent. Get draft picks.
Are you trading Beltre or are you trading
Elvis? No, you're not trading Beltre. He's going to retire a Ranger.
I would trade Elvis Andrews.
Yeah, he's got value. He's solid. You know, like, I mean, that's a guy that Cubs would go after for
the
sure.
Cubs would absolutely go after him.
Yeah.
Which makes more financial sense than...
Periscope says Odor. I'm not a huge Odor guy. I mean, he was a hype machine when he came into the league, and I just haven't quite seen. I'm not saying he sucks, but I haven't seen the greatness.
I think he's in the middle. I think Rougned Odor is a nice player. Now, is he Lindor? Is he Baez or Happ?
No.
Or
no.
Happ or Odor? I'm probably taking Odor because Happ couldn't hit, you know, water from the beach at this. The guy just is not hitting.
Yeah, but that's right now. I mean, when you look at, again, you're a big projections guy. Projections. Ian Happ is going to hit. He's going to, dude. He will.
You keep saying that.
You just
and
don't
I'm not
believe.
Sure that he is.
You look at numbers right now. You don't like there is no possibility of
because,
them improving.
Right, because that's not true. What I'm saying is these guys are struggling because the league has found holes in their swings. Like this is the Shohei Ohtani conversation. He's not going to struggle at the plate because he doesn't take enough at bats. Like there's not enough tape on him. Right? But yeah. Ian Happ has played a full season. There's a crap ton of tape on him. They're throwing him cutters and two-seamers low and away. It's Javi Baez. Slider away, good night now. You know, but that's the thing. Anthony Rizzo's interesting because he's just swinging and missing. It's that simple. He's swinging and missing. Chris Bryant's swinging at terrible pitches. Okay, those two guys will be fine. Wilson Contreras?
I mean, the guy can hit. For sure. I think that you're right. The league has caught up to him a bit. And so, again, all this boils down to is they need to make adjustments and they need to correct their approach. I mean, the way you beat pitchers when it comes to they've seen tape and they know where the hole in your swing is, however you want to put it, is you find that fastball and you stay on that fastball and you are disciplined.
I agree. What do you think of Matt Harvey? Because how much time do you think we've done this show today?
A lot.
An hour.
A lot, dude.
We're at an hour
right now. I love the prospect of Matt Harvey. I love the idea of it. I think Matt Harvey, he's either going to really benefit from a change of scenery or he's going to just continue to just spiral into the ground.
The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
One of that core group of young pitchers, you know, the DeGroms, the Thors, the Mets.
Yeah, dude.
And now he is out in New York.
Which
the Mets
amazing.
DFA'd him. Because he wouldn't take a minor league assignment. He's had Tommy John and he's had thoracic outlet surgery, which is basically the nerves that run through your shoulder.
Yeah.
He's still throwing 94, 95. The issue is he doesn't have command. And what you need to do with that thoracic outlet surgery is you need a long rehab to strengthen the shoulder back. And they really haven't perfected that rehab because it's a new procedure. So the question is, do the Texas Rangers, who have come up, the San Francisco Giants have come up as aggressive pursuers, are those two clubs prepared to stash Matt Harvey, pay him the veteran minimum, because that's all you need to pay him because he's got $5.5 million from the Mets, pay him the veteran minimum and let him rehab and try to grow himself back into a major leaguer. If I'm the Giants, I'm doing that deal right
yeah.
now. The moment he's a free agent, like I'm on the phone with his agent saying, hey, here's the deal. We'll pay him $750,000, which is over the veteran minimum. I'll pay him $1 million a year to just rehab.
And that's a very Giant move, isn't it? I mean, they are a pitching organization.
And this is where the Rangers, we were talking to you know the Ranger fan on Periscope earlier, this is where the Rangers are going to struggle.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Rangers are not a desirable location. They're not a desirable destination at the moment. And so when you have the Giants, where everybody wants to play, and especially pitchers in that ballpark want to play there.
Yeah.
When you have teams like the Dodgers, the Cubs, you know, all of these contenders that are saying, if I can get Matt Harvey back to three quarters of who he was, he's going to win me 15 games.
Yeah.
I'll take a shot for veteran minimum or $1 million
because
or less.
Because the upside is so worth it.
Oh,
because
yeah.
The minimum is
yeah.
so low. The risk is tiny. This is the Clay Buchholz theory of life. Dude, go out and sign a Clay Buchholz who's dominated in AAA and see if he can get the job done at the big league level.
Yeah. Hey, here's a question for you real quick.
Yeah.
Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Dodgers and Padres. Worth it or not worth it?
Not worth it. I don't think it's worth it. I don't know. And you made a great point. What do the Padres gain out of this? I mean, what exactly? You took games away from Petco Park, number one, and cost that team money, in my opinion.
In your opinion, they absolutely cost them money. They yeah. cost them three home gates. They cost them overall attendance. They cost them concessions. Like, I mean, it's the Dodgers. The Dodgers coming into San Diego is a big weekend. It's a big weekend series. Now, of course, you have Hispanic players. They want to, you know, Mexican players that want to play in Mexico. Christian Villanueva, who's in the running for Rookie of the Year right now, Mexican guy, wants to play there. I get it. It's cool to see Fernando Valenzuela again throw out a first pitch again.
Yeah.
That's all well and good. I don't think it was worth it.
No, I mean, I wasn't even excited about it. wasn't even excited about. I was more excited about watching the Dominican team in spring training than I was about this game.
Yeah. By the way, Lauer pitched really well for the Padres.
Needed it, dude.
Pitched really well. I think the Padres have some tough decisions to make with their pitching staff. I mean,
Mitchell's not a tough decision.
Well, it's 9 starts.
It's not a tough decision. You're not 4 starts in anymore, bud.
Do you send him down or do you send him to the bullpen? What do you do? I would send him down.
Yeah, I mean, if you want him, if it really matters that much to you that he's a starter, you send him down and let him keep, you know, getting his innings load.
He's not a major league pitcher right now. And that's why when we talk about whether or not the send him down or send him to the bullpen, he's not a major league pitcher right now. He's got no confidence. He's got nothing that's special. Like, I think you got to send him down.
And send his ass down. He'll figure it out. Yeah. I mean, if it's meant to be, he'll figure it out. And I don't know that they need him to figure it out. It would just be nice, right? Like, it would just be nice for, you know, Mitchell to figure that thing out.
Well, and I also think the time has come for the Padres. You got to bring up Luis Urias. I don't know why you haven't. I mean, there's nothing that you have at the major league level at second base as to why you're not bringing him. Like, I can see Margot struggling. Okay, great. I can see Perella a little bit. Okay, great. But you're getting great at-bats from guys like Galvis and Hosmer. And, I mean, Villanueva's hitting his home runs. Cordero, Franchi Cordero is,
yeah.
I mean, he is so much fun to play, watch play. You have got to do your best at second base. And right now you have a guy in Urias that's ready to go. You know, like,
and there's really no reason not to bring him up, and I'd be curious to know why they haven't. But you know, you're the Padres. You're not winning the West. You're not going to the playoffs. The whole idea here is to develop and be as competitive in each and every game that you can be. And once you do that, you're good. You know, Hosmer didn't come here to win this year. He came here to win in the long term.
To be part of something.
Yeah, man. A lot of players, and this is what the casual baseball fan doesn't understand. And a lot of sports people don't even understand this. In baseball, again, baseball is a unique beast. It is not a 3-year, you know, trust the process, right? This is a 5-year deal. Yeah. This is a 5-year window. And Eric Hosmer was just the beginning. And you're right. He wants to be part of something special. And when we say special, we say, hey, I went to the Padres when they sucked. And now I'm the reason we won a World Series. And that's what he wants.
Yeah, and Urias is a guy that you really... You have to be excited about him. I mean, he's come up through their system. He is raking at AAA. I mean, granted, it's the PCL, but, you know, in 99 at-bats, he's got 6 doubles, 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, 20 walks, now 19 strikeouts. But he's slugging .465. Like, I don't know why you don't promote the guy. He's shown that he has steadily increased his numbers, especially average for a second baseman. Like, I would bring Urias up. I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what you have to lose.
The more time the young guys spend around guys like Eric Hosmer, the better.
Yeah. And this team, again, the expectation for this team is just to compete.
Yeah.
That's all. Should we talk about Avengers?
Tomorrow.
We saw Avengers over the weekend. Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow. It's been 1 hour and 7 minutes so far. So we'll talk about it tomorrow. Make sure you find us online, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, themontyshow.com, The Monty Show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, The Monty Show on Twitter, JTM Show on Twitter for Jake, pissing people off, getting in arguments on Twitter.
Remember one thing, friends, LeBronto is on TV tonight.
LeBronto is on TV right now. They're tied at 12 in the first quarter. Find Jake on Twitter, JTM Show. Find me, The Monty Show. We'll see you tomorrow. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.